Thanks for tuning in to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Patchworks and hosted by me, James Gennepool Rogers. We bring you interviews with industry thought leaders, C-suite of tech companies, and leading retail brands. And we also do our own talking heads on important strategy areas around e-commerce. In return, all we ask is you tell other people about the podcast and share our social posts. And if it's your first time listening, please do give us a rating wherever you are listening. Thanks, and we hope you enjoy it. So our topic today is about how can e-commerce retailers measure and improve online customer experience? This has come out of a lot of conversations we've had with various businesses recently. So it'll be an interesting one to start the year with. And the context of this is like we're expecting tough trading conditions to carry on through 2023. We touched upon that in our annual roundup episode. We're expecting that to continue through H1 2024, perhaps even longer in some markets. There are lots of pressures on people. CPAs have been increasing in certain channels. People are struggling to sell at full price, and keeping customers happy and keeping them buying in a really competitive market is really, really important. And customer support expectations are increasing. Therefore, customer experience strategically really important, but also tactically, what can you do practically about this? So that's what we're going to talk about today. Anything you wanted to add, Paul?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, some really good topic areas. Yeah, a few that I find really interesting personally. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and we'll try and keep this concise because this is such a big topic. And we are going to inevitably mention reference loyalty and referrals, but we're not going to get into detail on that today because we're going to do a follow-up episode specifically on that area because it's such a broad topic. So the first thing we're going to start with, because if we're going to talk about how you measure and improve online customer experience, it starts with how do you measure and report on CX? And surprisingly, not all businesses do this. And most KPIs are revenue based on like conversion rate, AOV, etc. But actually, increasingly, smart e-commerce teams are building out OKRs, objectives and key results, which do have customer-centric metrics involved in them. One of the most commonly used is NPS, Net Promoter Score. For those of you who've not used it before, this involves asking a simple question like, how likely, based on your experience today, would you be to recommend us to somebody with a scale from 0 to 10? And then you can also display a freeform field afterwards. So if somebody chooses an 8, they can add comments to it and you can collect that information. You can also go even further and ask additional questions around that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But this NPS works really well on an order confirmation page. Somebody's placed the order. We'll find out how satisfied they were with that whole order and experience online. Do that online. You can send it via email or even SMS and follow up. But then equally, it's important to then maintain and measure that because people's NPS scores can vary. You can go from order to order and go up and down, or you can even have a really bad shipping experience after having a really good online experience and that NPS score drop. So it's always worth following back up once an order has been delivered and you then want to get that post-purchase NPS score. So that, I think that's the key one that I've seen. But Paul, I know you want to talk a bit about qualitative feedback as well, because we know a few businesses doing smart things there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I think NPS is obviously the primary one. I think the interesting thing of NPS, so a lot of our clients don't do it at all. And then probably 50% of our clients do the order confirmation kind of rating. So kind of NPS style rating, like you say, 0 to 10. The only issue that I think a lot of people have with NPS email is just if they're sending other emails, kind of how it or like where it kind of sits. And they obviously don't want to bombard people. So I would say the other one that you mentioned just before the call was service reviews. So I think a lot of people go down that route and then kind of factor NPS into it. Product reviews, I've seen some of our clients use as like a metric. Some of our clients who will come on to Census, which I'm obviously going to try not to sell, but it's basically our Shopify app for a lot of this stuff, but equally has loads of others on the market, some of which have more functionality in areas, etc. But with that, people are now starting to embed that into things like returns journeys and stuff like that. So I think the more sophisticated clients we work with, the higher volume client are doing stuff like that. So product reviews, service reviews, true NPS, on-site experience, returns experience. But I would say our average client, who's maybe more of a premium and luxury brand, are a bit scared of a lot of this stuff. And they're maybe doing like a subtle rating on site and then asking some qualitative questions. And that would be aimed at, the majority just ask kind of what one thing could have been improved from your experience. And then maybe if it's post-launch, try and spot some bugs. But we've seen a lot of data via sensors, and it's super interesting, some of the stuff you get back. And then if you ask it alongside other questions, you can kind of filter down, and alongside the rating, you can pull out the feedback from below 0 to 5, for example. And it's really interesting. The feedback differs by category, I would say. So we work with some fast fashion brand, or it's on some fast fashion brand. They're more around shipping, carriers, and then the obvious stuff around like return sizing, all of that. And then the premium brands are usually more around like product information, maybe like payment methods, that kind of stuff. But I agree with you. I know you're super pro all this stuff. And I think if you can keep it on brand, I think the more data you can get around the experience side, the better.
Yeah, fully agreed. I totally get that balancing out the premium luxury brands want to tread where they don't want to be seen as devaluing their service, but fundamentally customer feedback is important, because even in a premium brand you can piss customers off, and you've got to know what people like and don't like. So the tonality of it and the style and the presentation can be completely controlled. So for me, it's not a this is just mass market retail. I've never seen it that way, and I think it can be done sensitively, and I've seen enough businesses do that. You're right about the, you don't want to bombard people with too much communication, but this is why I think the NPS on order confirmation makes perfect sense, but build it into your order confirmation email as well, because then you're not adding another communication in, you're using the existing communication, and lots of people do actually check their order confirmation emails. Generally get reasonable open rates on those ones. So I think that's important. And for purposes of being balanced, we talked about this before the episode, like Census. I mean, I'm a big fan of Census, and I know a few people using it. I know lots of your customers do. But there are lots of other ways you can do this. Some platforms even offer very basic stuff that you can just hook in natively on an order conf page. It's, you know, survey tools like SurveyMonkey, Hotjar's been doing this for a long time. There are lots of tools out there. The most important thing, though, is, you know, this is our starting point. You've got to measure and report on customer experience. If you don't, it's very hard to improve it. And it's very hard to know who's happy and who's not without that objective way. And also, if you're putting loads of money into these programs to enhance customer experience, you want to validate that. And you want to know that those metrics are going up and improving over time. And where they're not, you can react to it. So yeah. We'll come back to that a bit about how you...
The only one thing I was going to add around the value of using an app like Census, or, you know, Bearing or No Commerce, or there's some specialist ones for non-Shopify as well, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'll send them to you and we can add them in the post afterwards. But the only value that these providers will bring is you can tie it back to an order and a customer. So you can then push the data into like a CS platform, for example. Maybe you could like prioritize issues for like a VIP customer or something like that. And you can also start to like assign monetary value to stuff. But I think like when you start to get into loads of, or like when you start to look at this seriously, that stuff becomes important. But I think at the highest level, just getting as much feedback as you can from the average customer. Although I do think true NPS is really important as well, so that you do get the return experience and the carrier experience as well.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And somebody that we know well, and many other people listening will know, Dan Barker launched a tool a while back, Satellitics, and was doing some really smart stuff around that whole post-purchase measurement and then post like delivery measurement to measure one, the different parts of that customer experience journey, and then helping clients to, through integration, I mean, integration with Google Analytics for a lot of them, to be able to then measure what impact the high, you know, whether someone's a detractor, promoter, etc., what impact that has on like purchasing and spend, but equally the ability to react. If somebody goes from like an 8 or 9 after purchase, and then after delivery you measure them down at 5 or 6, something's fundamentally gone wrong. They may have pushed that, as you said, into a customer ticketing solution, or even generate a report that somebody can manually pick up. It's really important. The whole point of measuring customer experience is to change our behavior, not just to look at it and go, oh, isn't that great.
The Patchworks integration platform connects key e-commerce systems, storefronts, marketplaces, ERPs, CRMs and fulfillment solutions, allowing retailers to simplify technology stack integration and do away with point-to-point vendor-specific apps. Patchworks automates the flow of data across the business, allowing the business to scale without overwhelming the operations. Find out more at wearepatchworks.com.
So let's move on to the role of first-party data. This is something that's like a burning issue for a lot of businesses wanting to increase first-party data. So let's start for, there'll be someone here who are advanced in it, some who are just getting started, and others who don't really, haven't really looked into it or isn't their role. So do you want to start by giving some context? Why is first-party data important in the context of customer experience?
So I think we obviously did our, I think by the time this is published, the last episode will have been the 2023 summary. And we talked about some of the big trends that we saw. And I think the biggest one I've seen recently is this stuff. So basically building the foundations to capture as much data as you can from a customer. So at the moment, there's a massive trend in the industry around linking all of this to an account. So if you look at like Adidas, Nike, Salomon as examples, they've all got like an account proposition, which is kind of tied into membership. And then as you go through various levels of engagement, they capture more data or they kind of ask you more questions. And I think a lot of that is, so some of that is focused on tracking. So to get more granular tracking around a user, and a lot of it is around building the profile to better serve the on-site customer experience and then also better market to you. But there's a lot more examples now of brands doing this and then personalizing the experience really well. So Spoke is a really good example. Eaton Shirts is a really good example. So as part of the sign-up process, they'll ask you information about your sizing and your preferences, and then they'll pre-filter PLP, they'll pre-highlight sizing on PDP. Spoke do a similar thing. I've seen it on pet food sites as well around information you're inputting around your pet. So I think, and particularly with like, so that's one side of it. So just building a better experience and, you know, better merchandising based on this data. The other side of it is obviously countering some of the stuff that's happening with cookies and being able to better market to and serve an experience for new customers, all of that kind of stuff. So I think, though, for the two reasons there, so retention becoming so important and the demise of cookies, I think this is like right on everyone's agenda at the moment, and that's kind of what's driven the surge with CDPs as well.
Yeah, the profiling piece and then dynamically changing what is shown to people, it always surprised me when people were using various tools, whether it was a true fit, dress pick your tool, which enabled people to build up custom views. That was there and was only driving product recommendations rather than default sorting and listing. And it's such a natural extension of that, is if you're going to give that information, you've got to materially change the experience to benefit people. And equally, being able to like help people by pre-filtering out or deprioritizing in list grids items that are out of stock for the size that the customer needs. Because we know that fractured stock can really piss people off if they find an item they really like and then they go to it and they find their size isn't available. So I think first party data is important, and also anything that gets customer data direct from the customers rather than proxy data is really useful. And I guess opt-in forms, I don't know what you think about this, but opt-in forms I find are an area that they get underutilized, because there's definitely the minimalist view of, do you know what, we just want the email address, we want the sign up, well, we want the mobile number for our SMS marketing, we don't want any other data, because, you know, the maxim is the more fields you put in, the lower the overall response rate. But the question becomes what you use an opt-in form for. There are two ways to do it. You can add a few fields in to get a bit more information so you can increase your segmentation. Especially good when people have got lots of different communication options and you want to narrow down what people are interested in. But the bit that I find there's use the least is the post-opt-in data enrichment. So what normally happens is somebody opts into an email marketing program and then they go into product marketing cycle, promotion marketing cycle, and that's it. but there aren't many interim bits of saying, like, you know, thanks for signing up. Now get X in return for Y. Give them a mini reward in return for giving you additional lifestyle cycle information, which could be really helpful in terms of pushing your segmentation and your data flows. Do you find that, or do you think people are getting a bit better at doing the post opt-in enrichment?
No, I completely agree with you. I think it's definitely coming up more. So a lot of people actually use census and surveys in general for this now. So, like, because it's tied to a customer record, essentially they'll ask, like, was this a gift? What other brands do you use? And then that can be pushed into the customer record and then the CRM. So I've seen that a lot more. I think I agree with you on the welcome pop-up. Like, I still think so many people are basic on that. Like, I was emailing a client yesterday and they use essentially a desktop-only format for data capture pop-up, which is stupid. And I think the other thing now is a lot of the bigger brands are doing SMS as part of the process. So Reformation is a really nice example where it's an email form. The second phase is an optional SMS, which some people prefer. And then some people then use solutions like ShopPop to do WhatsApp. But I think that's still very immature. But yeah, I think the only thing I would say is, like, the if you're going down that account route, I think that's a really, you can build a really good proposition around, like, sale preview, you know, event, all of that stuff that makes it a bit more palatable to input more data. The only other one I would say is if you're giving, like, 15% off first purchase, then I think you're probably a little bit more, people will be more willing to give away more data. It's kind of, it's a balancing act, isn't it? Like, you don't want to make it too exhausting if you're just saying sign up to a newsletter.
Yes, completely agree. It is about value proposition and what you're giving away. And I think the starting point is always start with the simplest form possible, which is your email address. That is it. And then go from there and test out different ways of doing it. I've seen a few of the bigger multi-brand sites have done it where they've then had a what are you most interested in, which then helps them up front. Others then do it post-collection. So yeah, come back to your point about the ability to get information from customers about, you know, what they like, dislike, you know, that persistent feedback loop thing. So an area that I think it again is underutilized, and it's underutilized because I think people are nervous of interrupting user journeys, is browse abandonment, and using simple, you know, panels, whether it's slide out, whether it's an overlay, when people are abandoning. On specific pages, like PDP is a great example. If you're getting PDPs at a disproportionately high exit rate, then you want to find out why, what's driving people to leave. So having a prompt out saying, hey, look, you know, give us some feedback. What was wrong with the product? You know, or what else did you need? Or can we help? Is a great way of building that profile data back to be able to say, do we have specific localized issues? And sometimes it can be a copy issue, it can be an image issue, it can be a pricing, you just don't know. Or it could just be that people want to take a bit more time to make a decision. So I think browse abandonment, instead of just using it from a pure marketing of, hey, get 10% off and buy it now, which I don't advocate because it's normally just a very quick margin erosion, but to get qualitative information back.
Yeah, I think there's a really cool, so Nike of just, because I probably historically wouldn't have liked browse abandonment pop-ups, but Nike have got a really good one. So if you've got an item in your basket, they show the picture of the item and then they start to basically flag the availability of the product. But have a look at it. It's really cool. And then they do it on inactivity on mobile. But yeah, I completely agree with that. I think when you see that done really well, I would imagine, and I've not done much with it, but I'd imagine that can have a really big impact. And I've definitely acted on those emails personally.
You can. I did, a few years back, I did a program for Sage, and we were targeting different ways of trying to keep people within product journeys for considered purchases, like accountancy software. For a lot of people, they're not going to go to a page and go, right, I'm going to buy that now. It's multiple stakeholders and larger businesses, longer planning cycles. And we found that on the PDP, when we were looking at the average number of sessions until somebody got it into basket, it could vary from product to product. So simple products like stationery, that visit, software, 3-4 visits. So leave people alone for the first two. And then if it's on a third visit where we know that actually they're properly interested and this is the tipping point, bring it in a panel, which is, you know, can we help you? And it was like remind them of the product, remind them of the USP. Like, this is the only, at the time, only HMRC approved software. You know, do you want to speak to a product expert and get your questions answered? So not hammering them with sales stuff, but doing a, hey, that you're obviously interested, we could help you here. And that worked really, really nicely when bringing service proposition rather than just sales and discount. So I think you've got to use discounting in those, in browser band, very, very judiciously. Otherwise, you just end up either devaluing the product or giving money that you didn't need to. Let's talk about, So let's extend that conversation around customer feedback loops, because you talked about persistent surveys before. I know we talked about Census and other tools that do it in the checkout and other ways. How have you seen persistent surveys used well on e-commerce sites beyond the checkout piece?
Yeah. So I think something that we've started doing on new launches is we add the feedback tab pre-checkout or pre-cart and checkout, which I think is useful. So just trying to capture any bugs. So that's more of a reactive thing. We've also just introduced exit intent pop-ups, which I think you have to be very careful with. But if you run that for a period of time, you can get some really good data. And then I think just kind of post-order surveys to customers. Like, a number of our clients are running these at the moment, where they're basically trying to get insight by emailing a group of loyal customers to try and get feedback on certain things across the site. So I think they're probably the main ones that we've seen. Along returns would be another one, but they're probably the main ones that we've seen.
Yeah, definitely. I like those persistent icons where it's on any page. Tell us what you think, or it works really well on product pages, or it works well on category pages, just to get some additional qual feedback. But it has to be very simple. It can't be, hey, it's five questions. It's got to be one simple question from what I've seen in order to actually get people to do it. You'll only get a small percentage of visitors who will fill it out. But you know what? If you're getting hundreds of thousands of visits every month and you only get like 1% doing it, you're still going to get some decent qual feedback to use. The other one that I think is really good for customer feedback loops here, which helps track in terms of what's important to guys, because when we're talking about customer experience, there's the service piece of what you're delivering, there's the quality piece, but there's also the expectation piece. And are there customer expectations married with what you think customer experience is? And customer panels suit some businesses well. House of Fraser used to do this very, very well. I don't think they still have the panel, but when I worked there several years ago, the UX team were very hot on this. Getting customer feedback, not only online, but also through the customer panel. And the customer panel was a great place, not just for product feedback in terms of like the product range, the product quality, etc., but also with roadmap. So when they had a customer panel which had thousands, and then they had a select kind of, I guess, almost like VIP tier in that, who would provide feedback on product features. So they used to do like beta testing with them to say, look, okay, we're building out this new feature. This is what we think is important. Is this going to deliver what you as our customers need? And get that qual feedback at an early stage to refine the development of items in the roadmap. And I think that's really smart. And it doesn't work for everybody, and not all teams want to do that, but it can be a great way of increasing engagement with very loyal customers, but also getting the ability to polish what you're going to release as your MVP before it hits the market.
Yeah. I think one other point that I've just added at the bottom here that kind of eats into the next one a little bit. Liam, I'll give the credit to Liam. So he started playing around with OpenAI with the census data a while ago, and it was really interesting to see how good it is when it comes to summarizing large amounts of quality data. And I think if a brand wanted to do this as a project, one thing I think that can be really good is basically pulling together things like live chat, reviews. If you are running panels like that, you could get transcripts and basically mining the data and then pushing it all into OpenAI and then asking for specific bits of grouped feedback. So I was doing this a bit over Christmas with one of our clients, and it was all multi-language. And then I literally just really basic prompts. It was translating all the feedback. And then I would ask for specific feedback around carriers or specific feedback around pricing or, you know, discount code. And it was so useful and so easy. And I think that's one of the like simplest ways to get huge value out of some of the new AI stuff. But yeah, I couldn't believe how easy it was to get pretty decent insights.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I've seen that done really well with reviews in the past. When you're trying to pull out themes and looking at commonality of words and phrases, and then being able to do that to take a theme that's having an impact, whether it's a customer service impact or it's a product impact, and then analyze the relevant reviews in order to work out what the source of the problem might be. I know that sentiment analysis is used. Some people denigrate it and think sentiment analysis is really inaccurate. I'm kind of torn on that. I've spoken to some people who've used it very effectively, where they're able to tease out and aggregate feedback based around a particular sentiment, and others who say actually it's too misleading because the words we use we all have different lexicons and language, and therefore it's I don't know whether you guys believe all the sentiment analysis piece, or are you just doing it more on keyword analysis?
Well, it kind of. So it automatically, the way that we've used OpenAI, one for the monthly summary piece within Census, and then how I prompted the responses, it was doing it because I was essentially looking for five pieces of positive feedback and five pieces of negative for each one. So we just used ChatGPT for that. I've not used anything more advanced. I've seen it used within premium tools, but... yeah, from the data that I was getting back, and occasionally you need to do like a sub prompt, but yeah, I was pretty happy with it actually. And it felt, because like when you run it on a smaller brand, you can just manually go through all the responses and make sure it's representative. Yeah, and I was pretty happy with it. To be honest, I was so impressed with both the translation side and that side of ChatGPT. It's just, yeah, ridiculously powerful.
There we go. No, none of us need to do any work anymore. We'll just ChatGPT it. We'll deep fake AI our future podcast videos and generate all the content and lip sync it, mate, without having to be present. There we go. Yeah. That's how we scale the podcast. Let's move on to customer self-service and my account proposition, because this is a really interesting area. And so let's start the customer self-service bit, which is the prelude to why my account proposition is so important for delivering good experience. So there are lots of surveys out there seeing that, say, customers want to self-serve, want to increase their ability to self-serve rather than waiting to talk to someone or waiting for a customer service agent to act on their behalf. I think there's an Intercom survey I read end of last year that found 68% of support teams were investing more in automation to manage support costs in 2023. So offering people tools to do this, whether that is AI chatbots, better IVR inbound things, and there are lots of ways that they can do this, but the number one way typically is to make as much information and actions available as possible to people via their account. So not just, hey, it's an order history. That's just standard. Oh, yeah, your address book, you're editing your address book. But things like you have a loyalty program, surfacing loyalty info, status, tiers, eligible rewards, showing on order level what loyalty stuff's been redeemed, returns, what the status of returns are, how you initiate returns, etc. There are lots of ways that this area can be enhanced. I know, Paul, that you and your team have been doing, having quite a lot of conversation, a lot of work with your customers. So do you want to talk us through where are people going with the My Account proposition to improve the customer service and experience?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I would probably say a lot of people that I spoke to are trying to do this outside of the account. So I think order history, return status, all of that stuff, even partial fulfillment level data, all of that should be in the account because I think people look for it there. But the best example I've ever seen of this, and I don't think it exists anymore, and I think there are other brands that do it, but I haven't used any of them. But about 5 years ago, Bulletproof, who I worked with, Bulletproof Coffee, did a project. I think they invested a lot of money in this, where they built, and you've touched on the AI chatbots here, but they basically built a chatbot and it essentially just ingested all of their like a load of information around their like FAQs and kind of different things around the product. But then if you ask anything around where is my order, where is my return, blah, 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 it would prompt you to log in. And then it was integrated with, I don't know what provider they were using, but with essentially one of the kind of post-purchase CX solutions. And then it would give like pretty decent feedback on like where your order is, when it left the warehouse, all of that kind of stuff. But I don't know why they stopped using it, but it's really good. But I don't think the mainstream CS tools are far off that. Like you look at the kind of stuff that like the rule-based stuff that like Zendesk and Gorgeous do now, and then they can like prompt chats based on what's happening. I don't think it's long before they've got native integrations into, I guess, the e-com platform, but also like the Wonderments and the Narvas and tools like that. And then there'll just be like a quick login prompt and it'll all be done within the customer service widget, which may or may not be AI based.
Yeah, it's interesting because there is definitely a variance between expectation, I think, in B2C and B2B around what customers want to see in my account. I know from working with a few B2B customers at the moment, there's a lot of demand for improving and enhancing the core My Account section to surface more account level information. So I think there's clearly a differentiation in demand across different types of business. But the key thing that I mean I've picked up on a lot over the last few years from every business I work with is that what customers want to be able to do is to be able to initiate things directly themselves rather than having to contact somebody to initiate. So returns is a classic one. If you don't have a fully integrated returns portal, the ability for someone to go into their account history and click into an order and then click request return with a simple form to go through to start the process rather than having to call up somebody in the call center. So there are some simple ways that you can make life a little bit easier for people. The other thing as well is to be able to get questions answered contextually where they are in the user journey rather than having to be taken out. So a good example is FAQs. An FAQ used to be we've got an FAQ section, go in and maybe it's searchable and it's well designed, but you've got to now go to the FAQ page versus what I've done with a few companies, especially in luxury business, where on category landing pages or PDPs, there are contextually relevant FAQ blocks embedded into it. I did a lot of work with a jewelry company around this, about the type of questions. What were the barriers that people had to progressing and picture the user journey, and what questions do they need answering, and putting a FAQ block in to do that. And that FAQ block then linking into customer services where they wanted to go further. So if they had an answer, but then I want to speak to somebody, it could then push them into like a live chat, or it could direct them into the right area of the customer service and contact page. So I think there are ways that websites are getting a bit smarter at surfacing information to help tackle customer questions during the user journey.
Absolutely. I think, again, like you've mentioned here, but a lot of our clients are investing more in the chat piece, I guess. And I think like there's quite a lot of big brands now that have essentially got that whole piece nailed within the AI chatbot UI. And I think that I personally think that'll be the way that it goes, and it'll just get better and better at like prompting the chatbot. And then they'll just get better and better at like routing people through to different CS teams and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that'll be another one that's pretty big in terms of how that progresses as a result of AI.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting because prior to us doing this episode, I saw some research in the US saying, showing that the consumers said they're ready and happy to spend more, even more than $400 to purchase from a chatbot. So the resistance to using chatbots to drive commerce, whereas go back a few years and the prevailing logic was that chatbots are good for like humans to engage with customers, but people wouldn't actually trust an AI one to make purchases. Well, actually, that is changing. And you've got lots of good examples, haven't you? So the few that I put down was Sephora using Kik in the US. They not only provide good content like makeup tips, but they have short quizzes that then spit out personalized product recommendations. So I guess that's taking the premise of how some businesses have done it pretty well. Some of the whiskey brands are before we have a quiz, and you go through and answer five or six different stages. Like fashion companies done this really well as well. And at the end, here's products for you. We'll actually do that within the chatbot environment on a shorter form version. H&M also uses Kik, and eBay's got Shopbot using Messenger, which provides links to listings. So yeah, there's lots of examples of people doing this already. So let's move on to our final point. We said we know that loyalty and referrals fits in really well here, but we want to do a dedicated episode on it because it's such a broad ranging area. Is there anything else you wanted to say in the context of customer experience and loyalty and referrals, or should we leave that to our dedicated episode?
I think leave it. The only one thing I would say is I think it's got broader now because almost all of our clients are looking at this. Aren't necessarily looking at it purely as retention. It's like, so one of our clients is about to roll out membership in like a very similar way to Salomon, where, you know, it's promoted in checkout as a result of free shipping. You know, they're prompting it as part, almost in the same way you would as data capture, and then they're offering different benefits. And I think it's at foundation level, it's like it will be to drive loyalty longer term, but it's more to like build the accounts ready for loyalty and start capturing more data and having, you know, being able to like essentially measure all of this stuff against existing customers.
Yeah, I think
that's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. My only one comment I'm going to make today on this episode, because it's directly related to the customer experience, is the whole bit about choosing when to push things to people. And I have seen referrals pushed to people. I've had it to me, but like, you know, would you refer a friend and get, you know, however many pounds or you know, discounts for the next purchase after I've just had a really bad experience and put a crappy review? So
yeah,
please, if you're using referrals, don't do a one size fits all blanket in. Make sure that you have a delay mechanism to select the people that you are sending referrals to. And it links in really nice to MPS. If somebody's a promoter, it makes sense to say, hey, look, refer and earn and reward them as well as the person they're referring. If they're a detractor, don't try and get them to refer you. Fix the problem first. So that leads nicely into our final point. I guess this is a little bit of a roundup before we end today. Using customer experience indicators to change how you market to customers. So we've talked a lot over the time, and we've had various people on the podcast talking about flow-based marketing tools, whether it's Klaviyo or Metria. There's some really good stuff even in things like MailChimp for doing flow-based marketing based on subscriber flags. I think for me, the starting point of customer experience is making sure that the post-purchase experience of first-time buyers is tailored and is personalized. And this can be a simple flow for all first-time buyers, but this is onboarding people, rewarding them for making that purchase, making them feel important, giving them a reason to give a toss about your brand, rather than just saying, here's your order confirmation email, now you're into our marketing cycle. I posted a bit about this in my recent LinkedIn newsletter. It's something I don't think people do enough. As you get more sophisticated, you break this out by category and by purchase type. So it could be different emails if it's a subscription product versus a one-off purchase. If it's a considered purchase, like, you know, furniture versus it's a t-shirt, that's the more sophisticated way you evolve to. But starting point is first time buyer, give them a reason, make them feel valuable and give them a reason to come back, basically. I guess that's what my key flag on how you can change your approach to customers to deliver a better experience. What would you talk about, Paul?
So I think alongside that, the other thing that I'm usually surprised at how many people don't do this is the kind of the fulfillment piece. So kind of branding that experience, like the amount of times you spend like a fortune on something online, you know, premium product, and then you get like a few random DPD notifications and you'll get a separate order order tracking number and you have to go like look it up on there. Pages, etc. And I think that whole thing, like historically, you only really had Narva that could like build a really nice experience via email and SMS and then build a tailored order confirmation page. Whereas now there's so many like challenges and like, you know, really cost effective solutions for branding that. And I think that's another one. And the only other thing I was going to say is I think we could do a whole episode on the data and like where all this is done from a third party vendor perspective and like how it can all be tied together, because I think that's really interesting. Because you made some really good points then around how you could fill in a post-purchase survey and then how you should trigger an email based on, you know, that rating. And I think that could be really interesting as well. But yeah, I think that would be my one, the whole like, you know, timing and like how it feels with the fulfillment piece.
Yeah, great. It's every time we have these, we do these podcasts, there's like 101 different like ideas of, oh, that's an interesting area to talk about. Yeah. Well, I think let's draw this to close, because I'm wary of us warbling on for too long and people falling asleep. But anyone who's listening, I know everyone's got different viewpoints on this. We'd love to hear, like, you know, wherever you're listening, fire us back some information. We've put posts out on LinkedIn for our episodes. Add it to the comments or email us directly. What are you doing in your business? What's working? What have you seen that other people do you think's really good? Because the key point here is that the whole point of trying to measure and report on customer experience is to change our behavior so that we do things better, not just report it for the sake of it. So hopefully you found that interesting, useful. Give us a shout and do keep your ears open for the next episode we drop on every week. Until next time, everybody. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.